Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life. All right, welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am Rex Gorman. I'm sitting here with...
Tom Regan.
And...
I'm the special guest.
You're supposed to introduce yourself the normal way.
So my name is Darren Larson.
And Darren Larson is very special, and he's a snowflake, and he is beautiful. He's the wind beneath my wings.
Yes.
You feel celebrated enough?
I feel better now.
Okay,
like
good.
Every other person you give, like, special guest, and I didn't get that.
I know, but I did the whole bait and switch
thing. I've been waiting for 6 months for that, Rex.
I did the whole bait and switch thing with McGregor last time. I was like, we don't have a special guest. Let's talk to McGregor instead.
True story.
Do you want me to refer to you from here on out as the special guest?
Oh, man. That might get to my head.
All right. Anyway, so you can guess what we're doing this week. Last week, we talked to McGregor and heard some of his story. Just Lord's bringing him to where he is now, out of a life of kind of pursuing pleasure and wandering into a life following Jesus, and from there into a life serving him in ministry. Yeah. And so we're going to continue that. This isn't because we couldn't find anybody else to talk to. We did get some emails asking, people love to hear some of the stories of like Tom and Darren and Rex and McGregor and all that stuff. But we are in the middle of a series called The Word of Their Testimony. And Tom, where does that come from?
It comes from Revelation 12, when it talks about how the saints overcome the accuser of the brethren, the brothers and sisters, by the word of their testimony, by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of the testimony.
And by not loving their lives unto death. Hmm.
So there's power in our stories.
Yeah, there's power in our stories. So we just want to be able to celebrate stories and lift stories up that are already there. We know God does amazing things in people's lives, and it is encouraging and powerful to hear about those things. We also have a very special guest today. Very special guest.
That's never going to get old.
Yeah. Very special guest. Who are you?
Yeah. So it's funny. We were talking about this.
What's your deal? Didn't you ask that to somebody?
I asked, what's their deal?
What's your deal?
I think I asked Sarah that. So, Sarah, what's your deal? Yeah.
Sorry, Sarah. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. We talked about how to do this because, well, especially Tom Regan and I are in the front a lot, and we share pieces of our story. And I mean, you go back to the archives of Imprint Church sermons, you could probably patch testimony together. But actually, there's a lot of new people in our church as well that may not know our stories. But what we thought would be kind of cool in this particular one is Tom kind of shared his story of conversion, if you will, is what that was.
That was the bulk of the story.
Tom McGregor did. And my story, I think we're going to talk a little bit calling for me. So we'll get specific into that. I mean, it'll include how I became a Christian. But then I think you'll, to kind of give a little, foreshadowing of you, I think you're going to talk a little about your cancer journey, which is all the C's, right?
Yeah, that's what you do. It's good alliteration. There's three of them, too. It's Trinitarian.
So except we should probably bring Rex in. What are you going to talk about?
I don't know. Who knows? Cancer. I could talk about carne asada. carnitas.
And cheese. Rex said he's uniquely talented at eating things with cheese on top of them.
I'm basically the LeBron James of eating things with cheese on them. Is what I said, I think.
But cheese doesn't have that alliterative power.
It doesn't.
No, we could choose queso.
Queso.
Well, that's not technically a C, though. We're back in the same spot. Oh,
so
well.
Maybe it's just sounds. Maybe it's assonance.
No, it's assonance,
that's right.
Not alliteration.
That's right.
That's
it.
Oh, man. So anyway.
So what are we doing?
So we're going to... Darren was just saying, a lot of you have kind of heard some of his story, but we want to offer up kind of a Cliff Notes version of him coming to Jesus, and then spent the bulk of the time just talking about what calling into ministry looked like and what that has continued to look like because how long have you been in ministry now? Like
20. Well, right. I got into paid ministry the year I got married. So 1999 was the year, I got into paid ministry. I was kind of interning before that at a church, but it was like, hey, here's $600. You know,
for the year,
over 20 years, 23 years.
Would you buy the kids some donuts and fill up your tank of gas of my 1983 Nissan Sentra, and whatever's left over, you can just keep putting in your pocket. So I was like, I never bought the kids donuts. I just need that money. No, I'm just kidding.
And I didn't get gas. I just hitchhiked.
Exactly.
It's good to live in the light, Darren.
Yeah.
So Darren, let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
We're not going to spend just a ton of time here, but what was faith like for you growing up?
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up in a good family environment, kind of early on, where it was like, basically mom and dad and my older sister. My folks had some difficulties. I think they did a pretty good job at hiding that from us. But Yeah, they got divorced when I was about 9 years old and kind of created a lot of tension in my life. And so, you know, interestingly enough, my parents went their separate ways. My sister went with my mom. I went with my dad. And I remember very little church kind of experience in those days. Like, I think church, funny enough, I think church was still a positive thing in my mind, but it just didn't go. I mean, it was kind of the Christmas and Easter thing or whatever it was. There was nothing in there. My dad met a woman who eventually became his wife, who's my stepmom now. And she was a strong Christian and kind of helped my dad learn to follow Jesus, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, through that, I mean, there was a little bit of church experience there mixed in. But really, for me, it was a summer camp that I went to in a high school student, my sophomore year of high school at the foot of Mount Rainier, where I heard a speaker talk about how the Lord can take away your sins because of what Jesus has done on the cross, you know, and he can take away things like anger. And to me, that was like the most amazing thing I'd ever heard.
Taking away anger?
So describe that. Why was that amazing to you?
I think because I was living with a lot of animosity in my heart.
Like, did you know that, or was it just sort of
I couldn't
like,
have named it.
It was just kind of nameless, but it was just because of the split of your parents, that kind of thing. It was just carrying some anger there.
Yeah, there was really no stability at home. Like I was kind of back and forth between parents, and there was some custody issues, and it was kind of messy. I think if my parents were here, they would tell you it was messy. And it was hard for me to deal with it. I didn't know how to name my emotions, but I remember when I was sitting there like,
how did that anger manifest in your life?
Yeah. Well, I think I definitely had a sense of doing my own thing in junior high and high school. Junior high was a rough time for me. I kind of made some bad choices in junior high school, especially my later junior high years. We went all the way up through ninth grade in my junior high. And I remember like I would get into fights with my friends. I remember I got in kind of the wrong crowd. There were about three of us who were hanging out together that were kind of known a little bit as the bullies, but I wasn't like the brawler. It was like my friend who was the brawler, but I'd kind of back him up a little bit. But I remember once I've told you this story, Tom, before, but I remember once I went to camp and I had a really close friend named Toby. Toby and I were buddies. And I can't remember how we got in a fight, but we got in a fight one day, like an actual fist fight. And I remember we were kind of rolling down this hill because we were fighting. And I remember I'm like punching him. And I had this like kind of out of body moment. You know, it's like you're looking down upon yourself. And I just saw how wicked it was. Like I saw it was bad. What I was doing was horrible.
I think you told me you were like looking at his face. Your fist was cocked back and you're about to punch him in his face. And you had this revelation of like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I can't control myself.
I can't control myself. Yeah. And it was weird because I mean... It wasn't like everything in my life was bad. It was tough. I had some tough experiences growing up, but I just had a lot of angst inside me. And so, man, when I went to that camp and the man talked about Jesus and what Jesus did, it was kind of the famous, like, you know, write your sins on a piece of paper and go and nail it on the cross.
Yeah.
And it, you know, some people have gradual salvation stories, but I mean, I think I went from dead in my sins and trespasses to alive in Christ in like a moment. It changed everything. I came home from that camp and...
How old were you at that point?
14 or 15.
Okay.
Maybe 15. Yeah, I came home from that camp and I told my mom I became a Christian. She probably just thought, whatever, you know, it's kind of nice, you know, whatever it was. But it changed my friends. It changed my trajectory of life. My brother, my stepbrother, who was my stepmom's son, he'd come to Christ a little bit earlier than me. And it was kind of cool because he was praying for me and he was involved in this thing called King's Kids Youth of the Mission. And so he was involved this ahead of time. And I always kind of looked on it as if something that was weird. It was like super religious and super whatever. But I came back from that camp and I was like, I kind of want to do that. And so I started getting involved in ministry about my sophomore year, junior year maybe of high school.
So what did discipleship look like for you?
Yeah, it was growth. A lot of it was actually changing friends, honestly.
So did that happen just kind of automatically, like as your values change, or did you look around and be like, I need to make a change?
Yeah.
Is it something that you like did on purpose or just kind of slowly sifted out?
I think I knew it. You know, I think kind of something intuitively inside me said, these are the wrong people to hang out with. Like, you know, it's true, the bad company corrupts good character.
Yeah.
Not that I was the best of character, but
company.
Yeah, nice. But I think I knew that. So I came back and really what's interesting is during my like junior and senior year of high school, my brother became my best friend and our friend Joshua. So Josh, Jonathan, and myself were like the three amigos. Like we hung out all the time and we really pushed each other on towards good works and like growing in faith. And there was a lot of like serious conversations.
So were you going to youth group and church and stuff like that?
Kind of. Youth group was substituted by the King's Kids thing, yeah. the YWAM thing.
Yeah.
But I was super involved in that in my junior and senior year of high school.
Were you reading the Bible?
And that was another part of it. That's a good question, because I think after camp, I had decided that I should read a little bit of the Bible, and I didn't know the Bible. I remember going to church years before that with my dad's stepmom, probably 2 years before that. And I was sitting in a Sunday school class for like elementary kids or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And the Sunday school teacher got up there and is like, okay, who's the people group in the Old Testament? I remember this. This is like wounding to me. He's like, who's the people group in the Old Testament? I was a visitor to this church, right? I'd never been before. No idea. Never read the Bible. Don't know the Bible stories or whatever it is. He's like, oh, we should ask our visitor. And looks at me and is like... And I'm like, the people group, who's the most famous? And everyone's like in the class. I felt like everyone's staring at me. Like, yeah. What kind of idiot wouldn't know the answer
you
to this thing?
You should know this.
I didn't know there was an Israelite.
Let's ask the visitor. Wow.
Yeah, it was brutal. And I remember thinking like, it was horrible. Like, what a horrible experience. And I'm sure the teachers were well-meaning and stuff, but it was weird because I didn't have that. So when I got back from camp, I remember starting to read the Bible a little bit. And I kind of read it in such a way like everything was written to me, you know, not everything was written for me, but it was very different. I just read things as the word of the Lord to me, you know?
Yeah.
Which honestly was pretty cool for a while until I started to realize, there's context and there's other things
I can't believe that you did not immediately have a well-developed hermeneutic.
Yeah, seriously.
Especially being in high school or whatever. I mean, come on.
But I'd read kind of every morning, I'd relate to David in the Psalms. I'd relate to some of that, kind of the angst that he felt in there. It was one of those things where I felt like there was a lot of meaningful things coming out of the script. It was supernatural at that point. It was like the Lord was speaking to me. And so I started a daily quiet time kind of late high school days and journaling, and it carried on all the way to today.
You still talk about journaling quite a bit.
I stopped for a few years and I've picked it up again because it's actually really good for my soul to journal.
Okay, so at this point, you are in high school. You've been following Jesus for a little while.
Yeah.
Your brother's there helping with that. You get done with high school.
Yeah.
Obviously. I mean, I'm guessing you graduated high school.
I did, believe it or not. Southgate's High School.
What happens then? Because I know it wasn't straight on to like, okay, well, I'm going to be in ministry now.
Yep.
What happened after that?
Yeah, funny enough, because of my experience, you'd ask if I was involved in a youth group. It was minor. We would help out at youth group and stuff like that, but it wasn't my main source of kind of spiritual growth and development. Youth of the Mission, YWAM, King's Kids was. And so my only, what I would say, kind of brand of Christianity I knew up at that point was kind of the YWAM world.
Yeah.
And so when I graduated from high school, I didn't really want to go to college. I didn't really think it was my thing. So I wanted to do a couple things. I thought about being a fireman, which I thought was a good thing.
I don't like reading books. That's like opposite of who you are.
Yeah, I do like reading books. Yeah. I just, at the end of my high school, I was kind of bored with it. Mm. Like I didn't apply myself.
That, yeah.
And it was like, I think, and I was super passionate about my faith. Like our senior year of high school, my brother was really instigated of this. But we ran a crusade at our high school with the band Jeff Moore in the Distance.
Like with swords?
You remember?
Oh,
the, Jeff Moore in the Distance? I totally remember the name
of that band. So we brought them into our high school, along with the power team that used to tear the phone books in half and all that kind of stuff.
Oh my gosh, the power team.
Yeah, so we brought these guys into our high school, our senior year, and ran a big crusade there. And my brother preached. My brother's in ministry now. I'm super proud of him. He's a great dude. And I remember, actually, he's up on stage and talking about how he had a pornography problem. We'd never talked about this before, and it was amazing because it was like, I think we all had that kind of Me Too moment, you know, we're all like, and this was before the internet, it was like, it was a different world at that point, you know, and it was powerful because I think he was just honest with everyone, and he did an altar call, people came forward, came to Christ at this, so this was the world
I knew,
it was I wanted to see people saved, and I was like, I wanted the gospel to go out into the world, and so I was like, the way I can do this is join YWAM and go be a missionary, so.
Cool.
Because of my conflicting upbringing, I wanted to get as far away from as Port Orchard, Washington as I possibly could.
So
I applied at a DTS, Discipleship Training School, in Sydney, Australia. And I flew to Australia in 1995 and lived there for a couple of years. I did my DTS 6 months and And then I stayed in Australia for the next year and a half or so doing ministry around there as well.
And had lunch at Rebecca St. James's house with her younger brothers.
It was actually at a camp on the Gold Coast. This is a true story. I met Rebecca and her family. It was a family camp on the Gold Coast. Actually, may have been the Sunshine Coast of kind of near Brisbane, Australia.
No one knows where that is, Darren.
It's okay. I do. Actually, have you ever seen Endless Summer?
No.
Have you seen Endless Summer?
Seen the
a surfing
graphic.
Movie?
I've seen the graphic, not the
There's
movie.
There's a cool sign in there where they go. I've been to the, anyway. It's all
cool place.
Anyway. Yeah. So I hung out with Rebecca St. James and
she
her
was a big Christian
kid
artist in the '90s. For those who don't know, now her younger brothers are for King and Country.
They weren't then. They were
not
kids.
Then, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't even
that's
remember
how old
them,
you are.
But that's old I am. So so yeah, I didn't really want to do a traditional job. I kind of wanted to go into ministry and I didn't really know. Where to be in ministry. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know the right steps to take. And so for me, it was like, okay, this missionary thing. However, I didn't like to raise money. That was part of the missionary experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And so 2 years into it, I'm like, I need to do something else. So my buddy, he sends me a letter to Australia.
What's a letter?
I know, right? Like full on put a stamp in it. And so on a letter and then send it. And he sent me a note and said, my friend Daniel, and he said, hey, I've moved from Western Washington University to this school called Multnomah Bible College. And I figure you'd really like it here. It's a ministry-minded school and stuff. And so I thought, that's awesome, you know? And he said, you should apply. And so this is a funny story because I actually, I was trying to decide what I was going to do while I was in Australia. I applied to school internationally from Australia, sent my, you know, $30 application fee or whatever it was. And then I didn't get a response back, but I moved home in between this time. I get back home into Port Orchard, and I go to District 7 Fire Department, Chief Mike Brown, and I say I want to join the kind of internship or the live-in residency program for fire department stuff here, and I'd love to do this.
So then you thought, I'll do this vocationally as
and
a fireman
ministry,
and do ministry kind of on the side?
All that kind of, yep. Yeah. So I sat there, and because I knew someone, my sister was dating a fireman, I got in. And so it's kind of a funny story because after that, I get into residency, think that's going to be my call. Then I get a letter forwarded to me from Australia.
Oh my
from
gosh.
Multnomah Bible
so it
College.
Went from Multnomah to Australia
back
to
Port
Orchard.
And I get a letter from Multnomah saying you've been accepted to college for this next season. And so I had this kind of like moment of like, what do I
Make
do?
A choice,
what do you want me to do, Lord? And this was a really weird moment for me. Talk about calling, because I was like, I prayerfully like laid these things before the Lord. And I was like, Lord, what do you want me to do? What should I do? Should I go to Multnomah? Should I go to the fire department? You know, what is this calling? And I remember I talked to my grandparents about it once. My grandparents weren't Christians. Great people, loving people. They're, my grandfather was one of my heroes. But I told my grandfather, like, I had this opportunity, I got accepted to college. And he told me, like, if you go to college, we'll help you through that. Like, we'll pay for a chunk of your college.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's awesome. Because it was, like, at the time, $8,000 or whatever college cost.
Obscene.
And, yeah, so expensive, you know. And so... So I remember sitting there and looking between these things, praying about it, but every kind of road, like light, street
all
lights,
the green lights,
all the
yeah.
green lights, all the, you know, whatever illustration you want to use, the door open to go to Multnomah. So I went to Mike Brown. This was a great moment. I went to Mike, Chief Brown at District 7 Fire Department. I think he's retired now, but went to him and I sat in his office and I said, so I think I'm going to go to Multnomah instead. And he looks at me, he goes, if you go to college, you're an idiot. And I've never forgotten that. I was like, oh, maybe he's right. It was such a weird moment because I was like, oh. But in his mind. Because
you can get in right now. This is like a real.
And residency is hard. Yeah. At the. I mean, it was a pretty competitive little thing there. And I happened to get in because of someone I knew. And he's thinking to himself, and I'm sure he's right. This was a good career move. Like to join the fire department, you kind of get in. I think there's probably some firemen that are listening to this right now. Like firemen have a pretty good kind of, you know, work 8 days a month or 12 days a month or whatever it is. And it's got high risk to it. I know there's a lot of things that happen with firemen and there's some risks that are there. But I think most firemen that you know, I think will probably say, yes, I like my
job.
They
love their job.
You know, it's a good thing. So it was weird. But I decided I still backed down. I was like, yeah, I think I'm still going to go to college anyway. And so that's what I did. I rolled to Multnomah Bible College. I didn't go visit the college ahead of time.
And you thought you were going to study fire science. You got to tell that story.
Oh, man.
Fire science.
Yeah, Tom knows all my stories. Yeah, so I roll into college thinking I'd go for a year or maybe a semester just to see what it was like. I didn't know Multnomah was such a ministry-minded college. And there was a freshman mixer in the A-frame, if anyone knows Multnomah, which they've torn down now, in the A-frame there. And what it was is like all the professors would get together and they'd hang out and you'd go meet all the incoming freshmen and hang out with them. And there was kind of a an orientation for everyone. This is what it is. This is where, you know, you should be. This is what the classes are going to be like. And there were some professors walking around. And I remember Dr. Norm Cook. Dr. Norm and Muriel was his wife. They both they were both faculty at Multnomah when I was there. And Dr. Cook said to me, he goes, "So what do you want to do here at Multnomah? What kind of is your focus?" Not knowing they had like five foci that you could do at Multnomah. And I said, "Well, I don't know. You know, I don't really know what you offer, but I was thinking like there's some sort of fire science degree I could get so I'd go back and be a fireman sometime." And he looks at me, he goes, "Son, do you know what type of college you've come to?"
You did not, apparently.
I did not.
Darren really did his research.
So you just your friend said you should come here, and you were like, okay.
Yeah,
and
it was kind of a ready, fire, aim kind of moment, you know? Like,
that just sounds like an 80s movie to me.
Well, praise the Lord.
Yeah, totally.
Goes to a college show.
I mean, I'm not like that now. I'm kind of a ready, aim, fire guy for the most part. But in that moment, I was still kind of young and carefree. I was 21 years. Actually, I turned 21 in the dorms there in my first semester. And so I was kind of an old guy for the dorm because everyone else is like 18 years old, you know, so I became the old guy in the dorm. But man, the being at Multnomah in the mid to late 90s was life-changing. I mean, it was such a cool experience there.
How was it life-changing for you? I mean, I know obviously you didn't realize you were going to a Bible college to learn about the Bible and ministry and all that kind of thing. So but what was it about it that was so life-changing for you?
I think the first thing I would say about it was the community of Christ there. There was a brotherhood of people in the dorms there that was so helpful to me. I think it's, I'd never really seen, I had my friends Josh and Jonathan, my brother Jonathan and my friend Josh, that I grew up with towards the end of my high school. But there was something about the camaraderie of being in a place where a bunch of people are trying to seek the Lord together and working really hard at growing as disciples of Jesus together.
Yeah.
All of them were kind of ministry focused because I learned with that Brent encounter with Dr. Cook that Multnomah is a Bible college.
Wait,
and it's
what?
A ministry minded school. And so, by the way, I decided to focus at first on missions. That was my first thing, and then ended up becoming an education major. So I was thinking about going on and getting a master's degree in education, but I ended up not doing that for, well, I can tell that in a minute too.
But, yeah, that's coming.
But it was kind of one of those things where that community of Christ was so helpful to me. Like actually talking through, being honest with people about your struggles and sins. And I just remember like there was something about that. And there was such an eclectic group of people from so many different backgrounds and cultures and church experiences that it was super helpful to me. And I came into Multnomah without a lot of church experience. I had YWAM experience, right? And so I come into Multnomah with a lot of people that only knew kind of church growing up, youth group, and then they're going to college and they're trying to be in ministry. But I come into this like YWAM mindset, which YWAM kind of has a weird world at times. It can be amazing. YWAM can be amazing. It can be horrible as well, depending on the leadership of the structure of. And I had both when I was in Australia. I was in Sydney, had a great leader. I was in Adelaide, had a mediocre leader, and it just was a bad experience. But coming to Multnomah, it was a very different thing. We were all kind of pursuing the Lord together. We're all aiming at different stuff. And so, and I think the other reason why is because I had to get involved in a ministry. That was part of our calling. Our curriculum at Multnomah was that you have to do ministry and you have to do a kind of an internship.
Is it like a local church ministry that it has to be? Or?
Most, it could be church or ministry or some sort of ministry.
But you hadn't really had a huge attachment to the local church thus far, it sounds like.
No, I mean, I went to this First Christian Church in Port Orchard, who I got invited to.
Yeah, but even then you said more of your discipleship, more of your growth happened at YWAM. And then even right after college, you went and you were ministering.
Yep.
You know, you were being a missionary doing the YWAM thing.
And I went to college, or excuse me, I went to church in Australia, but it was kind of like a church hopping a little bit. It's funny enough, I went to a little Anglican church, Church of England church, right up the road from me when I was in Australia. But then I went to Hillsong, which is so funny. Huh. It was called Hills Center Christian Fellowship at that time or something like that.
Interesting.
Can't
whatever.
Get any different. Polar.
Oh, yeah.
The opposite.
It was right totally there. Weird. Yeah, it was just different. I think I also visited a Vineyard church at one point there in Sydney and just kind of like trying to figure out. Because I'd only had this YWAM experience and then this kind of First Christian Church of Port Orchard experience, which was good. The First Christian Church was great. A great experience there. And I have good memories of it, but I wasn't invested. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I wish I was a little more invested, you know?
Yeah.
Because I learned that later on, that the local church is really...
It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful thing.
I can relate to that. So it sounds like What you're describing almost sounds like Bonhoeffer's little seminary, that he his underground seminary, where it was like where it was kind of like a monastery.
That's
type
right.
thing. And that's so there you're under you're getting real deep Christian fellowship for the first time. But then also that's striping over, translating into local church involvement for the first time.
Yeah, because I was at a minister, because they require this ministry as part of your grade at Multnomah, they offer a ministry fair every year. I don't know if they still do this, but they offered this ministry fair. And what happened is all these churches would come and they'd set up a booth in the gym and all the students could walk through it, you know, and you'd be wandering through and trying to find a ministry. Well, I ran into this church, little church ministry that was a church plant. I'd never heard of a church plant before. I'm like, what is that? And the guy who stood there is a guy named Danny. And Danny was like, hey, we're looking for someone to come and help serve our students on Sunday mornings to teach Sunday school. And, you know, just we're a little church on the southwest side of Portland and would love some help, you know. And I'm like, that sounds pretty amazing. And so I started talking to him a little bit more and realized that I could come and just serve in some ways. And so I went to church there one Sunday, and it was meeting at Wilson High School in southwest Portland. And so I got a chance to go, and he introduced me to a few of the students that were there, and we met in the wrestling room at Wilson High School, which smelled so bad. So we'd have...
Were you wearing a singlet?
Yo, yuck. I sure hope not. But we'd have these Sunday school classes, because what they were doing at this time is they were during the adult worship, the high school and junior high kids would leave.
Yeah, they would.
And so youth group for me started out where they brought me in as kind of just like I had this little ministry internship, if you will. And I'd go into the high school on Sunday mornings and teach a Sunday school class. And I was just teaching like I was learning like Jonah and Nehemiah at Multnomah. So I was like, I'm going to teach those things, you know, because I didn't know anything else. So I'd bring all my newly found knowledge of cool biblical stuff and tell these high schooler kids.
Let me just download this on
didn't
you all.
Care.
Isn't that so cool though? That probably helped you out a ton.
It probably did, but it was probably horrible. But the kids
like,
listened to me.
12 leadership lessons from Nehemiah.
Yeah, seriously. Or let me tell you about all the connections of Jonah with the rest of the Old Testament and why Jesus is the new Jonah, the better, the true and better Jonah.
Getting a bunch of slow blinks.
Exactly, okay. And it was like, seriously, I'm not exaggerating. There were six boys and one girl in this high school, junior high class. And I didn't really know what to do with them. So I didn't know what to do with the girl in particular. Her name was Allison Knopper. Man, poor Allison. She turned out great, I think, by the way. But we just decided, hey, I just said, hey, guys, I'm going to teach you the Bible. And then let's go and play Frisbee, play Ultimate Frisbee. Come do this. And hey, let's have donuts together. Hey, let's do this stuff. And it just started to build in this kind of ministry. And I would play music on Sunday mornings, too, because the church was like 70 people. I mean, it was really small.
What was the name?
It was called River West Church.
Right, at that time, River West and a small 70-person church.
Small church. Mm. Guy Gray was the lead pastor of it. Danny was their associate pastor. He was kind of doing music and doing youth, and so he was trying to bring me on to get rid of some. He was an older, middle-aged guy. He's probably old like me now. Yeah. He was probably trying to
pawn off some responsibility.
Exactly. Yeah. And I loved it. I got to know Guy a little bit through that experience. Danny left the church eventually. Through a series of events, and I stayed on, and it just helped out. And this was where I got to that whole thing where they say, here's $600, you know, come teach our kids the Bible, and, you know, here's buy some donuts and fill up your car with some gas. And so it was a really great experience. We moved a lot. I set up chairs. I did music. I played bass and guitar and maybe some drums a little bit for them and stuff in this little small church. And it was a great experience. I there was no one else my age, really. I mean, there may have been a couple people, and I was like, 4 years older than the high school kids I'm teaching, right? So it's pretty funny. But it was a great experience there, and that was kind of the start of it. And then my wife and I met at Multnomah, and we started dating actually pretty soon after I got there. And I realized that after, you know, kind of a while being involved in the ministry there, that I probably needed to find a real job too. So I got a job at Office Depot. I was working at Office Depot. I was teaching Sunday school. I was helping the church plant. I was doing Multnomah and dating my now wife. And that was kind of my experience in Multnomah, which was super great.
That's awesome. Say that what were the conversations being had or the thoughts going on in your mind in terms of vocation and ministry? Because
We want to focus in on calling.
Yeah.
And some people have this very sense about calling for ministry, vocational ministry, that it is this direct and sort of undeniable, clear clarion call.
Yeah, yeah. There's a rainbow in the sky.
Totally. Yeah, there's yeah. Whereas we might also look at it as maybe more open-ended in a process of discovery. I mean, I don't deny that some people have a very strong, like, internal subjective sense of call. I don't deny that. But sometimes if guys or people in ministry, they don't have that, they think, am I really called?
Yeah.
And I think you can be.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that, I mean, it'd be interesting to have, you know, Don or David on here to talk about calling and vocation.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, we think that God, there, people have callings on them to be firefighters, to be policemen or teachers, you know, and not to just elevate this. Well, the true Christian way is to be called into vocational ministry.
Absolutely. Nothing else matters.
It's funny. One of the things I've thought very little about what I was going to say on this podcast, but one of the things I thought of in this time was I probably could have been a firefighter and I could have easily glorified God and did ministry in the middle of that. And it wouldn't have been like I'm stepping outside of God's will or something like that. Yeah. Like, I think in some ways I've thought of the, you know, will of God as kind of a box, and inside that box, there's lots of space in there to walk within.
Yeah.
There's places
you
can definitely jump outside of God's box, if you will, in that way. But within that realm of that box, you have a lot of freedom. And a lot of times, like, I think there's just kind of this, like, God might just say to us, well, what do you want to do?
Right.
Like, what are you gifted at
doing? How's he wired
you? Just do that thing, you know? And, like, you can glorify the Lord in that moment.
That's what McGregor even talked about a little bit last week, you know, talking about how he was waiting for, like, a compass from the Lord, basically saying, this is exactly where you should go, walking this way.
Yeah.
And basically when he walked away from his retreat weekend, like, of silence, trying to figure out, okay, where am I supposed to go, was, like, this feeling of God saying, like, hey, do what you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with that in mind, what does calling look like for you in this
point?
You're just sort of doing a lot. It sounds like, you know, you're working, you're dating Kelly, you're doing ministry as well. Is there a switch flipped in your head at this point thinking, like, I think this is what I'm supposed to do with my life, like church ministry? Or are you still just kind of, are you just kind of going week to week, figuring it out? Or?
Yeah, it's a funny question. I remember telling Kelly's grandparents, I met them, and we went down to Albany, where she's from, and I told them at one point, because I think she thought, her Kelly's grandma in particular was like, ooh, my daughter might marry, granddaughter might marry a pastor, you know?
Yeah.
And so she was super interested in that. But I remember telling them specifically once that I would never be a senior pastor of a church. Like, I'm going to be in youth ministry forever, or I'm going to do something else with my life, you know, because I don't want to be a lead pastor. That just doesn't sound fun at all. Spoiler alert. I became one. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those weird things. So I remember in those early days of Multnomah, like, being involved in this, like, church that was growing. And I think where my calling came in was twofold. I think the first one was a genuine sense internally that I got great joy in doing some of the things that I was doing in ministry. Like, I enjoyed teaching in particular. I enjoyed leading worship. I enjoyed leadership, which sounds funny. And maybe a little narcissistic or something. That was our word earlier, Rex. But
no. But I mean, when you say leadership, you're not meaning like, I love being in charge.
No,
what you're meaning is you love the
forward
thinking. You love the forward thinking.
I do.
You love the planning. Like, all right, how can we strategically get from A to B?
Yes.
That's your brain. That makes sense.
It's fun. Like, to me, it's a joy to do that stuff.
And it's like doing puzzles.
The buzzword in that day was servant leadership and trying to learn how to be a servant leader and whatnot. That was on the side. But on the other side was a whole lot of people telling me, you should be in ministry. You should be doing this. This is a good thing for you. And that was like, it was like a war of attrition, honestly. It was like, oh.
Well, it's a strange concoction of again, stuff that I feel like we talked about with McGregor as well.
Yep.
There's opportunity.
Yep.
And you're in the middle of an opportunity doing that.
Yep.
There's some gifting in that
you're
doing a good job.
Totally.
There's affirmation of a community as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
I learned how to play guitar because I liked Kurt Cobain. I'm a child of the 90s, right? Like, and
it wasn't to get Kelly, get girls.
Yeah, maybe that was a secondary motivation. But then I started using that thing, that ability to play guitar in a worship setting where I could glorify the Lord with it, you know? And it was like the Lord used some of those things that were just part of me. And I remember, like, so, you know, fast forward a little bit through our River West years, I ended up being there for 9 years, which is pretty, eight or nine years.
Hmm.
I think nine. It was a wonderful experience. I mean, there were ups and downs. The church grew tremendously during that time. I got to know the lead pastor pretty well during that time as well. But I remember at one point, so fast forward to the day when I realized that Kelly and I should get married and I was going to ask her to marry me. I remember having a real specific conversation with my grandpa one day, and I brought Kelly home to meet my family, and my grandparents loved her. My family was a little suspect on her because she wasn't a YWAMer, my grandparents loved her. I mean, like, felt like she was right at home immediately, because it's hard not to love Kelly. But I remember after they saw us together, I think it freaked my grandpa out, because he's like, I need to have the talk with Darren, you know. And so he brings me aside and gives me the conversation that I can't quite repeat all the words here in this podcast. Mm-hmm. Otherwise I get emails about it. But basically it's like, get your act together. You need to get a job. You need to like prepare and be ready mm-hmm. for this, like all this kind of stuff, you know? And I remember it was actually good advice, because I was like, you know, we can get married and everything will be rosy.
It'll be fine.
It'll be awesome, you know? But so I went back and told the board at this time I was kind of interning for legit. Like I made $1,000 a month at that point, you know.
Dang.
So it was like I'm making all
big
this
money,
man, big girl. Money. And I remember
You were there. No wonder you got
exactly. It was all about the money, all the Benjamins. Yeah. So I went back and told the board. Because I want to marry Kelly, and because I need to actually get my act together, I need to put my long pants on and get a real job, you know. And the board like took a minute and they said, well, how much do you think you can make? You know? And I was like, well, X amount of dollars, whatever it is. And they said, and they came back to me and they said, we believe in you. We think you're called to ministry and we think God wants you to be in ministry for the future. So we're going to give you that money to come and work for us as our youth director. And
you're like, oh, did I say this much? I meant
I
this
should
much.
Have said this much. Yeah. And it was it was totally affirming to me to say like, wow, someone believes in me and someone thinks that ministry is my calling. And I still wasn't quite sure. But so funny enough, in 1999, when Kelly and I got married, I became a full-time youth director at River West Church. The church just bought a building. Kelly and I got married. We moved to Lake Oswego. I started going part-time school. I had 1 year of school left to go at Multnomah, funny enough. Kelly had 1 more year of school left. Yeah, Kelly had 1 more year of school left, and I had 2 years. But I started going part-time. We got married young, so it was like this whole thing of like, man, let's do this thing. But it was like over and over again, I just had these affirmations, and I just got involved in this little church plant, and the Lord was doing great things in it. It was super fun.
I think maybe there's a principle here of calling, not just to, and sometimes we think the word calling as an only vocational ministry, but we know people who are called into the marketplace and who feel called by the Lord and gifted to be a boss and to have employees and to be a witness for Jesus and to serve people through their leadership in the marketplace. So what we don't want to do, friends, in this podcast is elevate pastoral calling
above
you know, just a general calling, specific calling for Christians to enter into certain spaces, whether that's to be, you know, a mom in the home or to, you know, be in the marketplace or be a librarian. But I think here's a general principle that a biblical principle I see in your life, Darren, that's true for vocational ministry and true for other areas of life. It's this idea of that there's an internal sense of desire for something, but there's an external affirmation.
Yep.
So like in 1 Timothy 3, it's talking about overseers, elders. This saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to the office of overseer, he desires a noble task. So anyone aspires, he desires. So there's an internal desire. And then the very next verse, therefore an overseer must be above reproach. And it goes through this list of 14 qualifications. And so the idea is there's internal desire is not enough to confirm necessarily that this is truly a calling or God's leading. There needs to be some external affirmation about that. And you were getting that. So you felt this internal desire and you had this external affirmation.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's how you find out what your gifts are. You're like, I like doing this. I think I'm pretty good at this. And other people say, hey, when you did this, this was great. Yep. You know? And so you can go, oh, I think this is how the Lord has wired me.
Well, we often don't see ourselves clearly, like ever.
Totally.
You know, we either have too low of an opinion of ourselves or too high of an opinion of ourselves. So we don't see ourselves clearly. So sometimes that affirmation can be clarifying in a huge way for, oh, well, maybe this is what I'm called to do. I've had those moments. I know.
Totally.
You guys have had those moments.
Well, even years, I mean, I spent these 9 years at River West in Lake Oswego, which was awesome, a great experience, a great church family, watched the church grow and things like that. And I began towards the end of my time there kind of feeling like the Lord had called me to something else, like maybe to plant a church and to be a part of a ministry of a lead pastor. Yeah. And I have a funny story about that because I remember it was kind of a freak out. Honestly, this is funny. We had a good life in Portland. We really did. The church took care of us. It was cheaper times then, so we were able to buy a kind of an entry-level house. which ironically is probably nicer than our house today. but it's kind of an interesting time because we were able to buy this house, and the ministry is going really well. Like, there were a lot of students, there were a lot of people in the church. Church was growing. Every from the external standards was like things were going awesome, you know?
Yeah.
But I had this kind of feeling like I should be doing something else, you know? And I remember going to Guy one day and taking the risk and saying, I feel like it's time, you know? And so we met at the McAdam Starbucks there in Lake Oswego. And I remember saying to him, like, I feel like I want to plant a church, you know? And I've told this story before, especially if you've been here a long time, but it was so funny because Guy was this kind of, in my mind, a hero. Like, he had planted a couple churches. He knew what it was like. He paid his dues and all that kind of stuff. And so he says something that kind of changed the trajectory of my life. He goes, man, planting a church is so hard. It's the worst thing ever. Like, he's like, planting a church is a toll on your life, your family, your mental health. He goes all these things. He's like, planting a church, I would tell everyone to not plant a church. Except for you. I think you should plant a church, you know? It's a great story. Yeah. I mean, Guy can probably tell you what he was thinking even in that moment. Because I can tell you where I was sitting in that McAdam Starbucks. It was that important to me. Because I was like, either the guy likes me or hates me. I can't really tell, you know, because he's told me all these things about his community. Yeah. But I remember that being, again, like you said, Tom, that external feeling of like someone is affirming within me a calling to ministry,
a confirmation.
So it was kind of an interesting deal. And I left River West at that time. We moved to Chicago and I finished up.
I think it's actually unwise to move forward with something if you don't have trusted, kind of godly people in your life telling you this is a good thing.
I just see
that scriptural pattern in the Bible.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I also think, like, you know, this is speaking for myself, but I know it happens a lot, is there's a sense where, okay, is this a calling or is this just restlessness? Am I just wanting something different? You know, because at this point you've been there for 9 years, 8 years, whatever.
Yeah, and it was comfortable. I mean, we were doing well. We just had Bethany. I mean, she was a little one at that point, and it was like, wow, this is amazing.
You mentioned, sorry, I don't want to cut you off.
Yeah, go for it.
We might be thinking the same thing. You mentioned you're in this middle of this comfortable spot. Ministry's going well. Mm-hmm. Life is comfortable. Mm-hmm. Got the house. Bethany shows up. What was it that made you feel like it was time to move on? Mm. Can you put your finger on exactly what it was, or was it just?
Yeah, I think, I think first of all, I had really healthy leadership modeled for me at River West. And I think I aspired to that. Like, there was something like I watched. And Guy's an
interesting, I want to exercise that.
And Guy's an interesting guy because he and I have a very similar personality at times. We're also very different in the way we do certain things. And I remember there was a sense, like, I'm looking at Guy going, I want to do a lot of that, but there's some things I want to do different too.
Definitely,
you know what I mean? Like, there's some other things.
Sometimes that's actually what I think I've seen God use to grow leaders and start new things, is you see, like, hey, I appreciate these things that I see, but here's how I would do it if I were, you know, calling the shots. It's not necessarily an arrogant thing. Like, I just need to do it my way. I feel called by God, led by God to do something, and I want to do it kind of this way according to my convictions.
And it's funny then, because I mean, fast forward years later where I'm doing the ministry and stuff, and I look back and I go, man, some of the things I thought that I would do different, I just think
end up doing the same.
Doing the exact same ways, because you have all these aspirations and things like that. And it's like the whole, you know, Mike Tyson quote, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth, you know? Like, that's church planning, by the way. Yeah, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Let me throw in one. I thought of the third piece that I left out accidentally on discerning God's leading or calling, whatever you want to call it. So I think there's that internal desire, there's external confirmation, and there's opportunity.
Good.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you might get two out of the three, you might get this internal desire and other people saying, like, yeah, I think this would be good. And
that's great.
That's pretty good. Like, you need those things. But if literally God never opens the door for you, like, that's a pretty clear indication.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and then if he does, I don't believe in open door theology, that what I call it, like, where as long as there's an open door, that means that must be God's will for you. I've had open doors in my life that God's used to show me, no, I want you to stay with what you're doing.
Yeah.
But
you're
point,
right. There were opening of doors that happened in front of me. Even the fact that, you know, I got accepted. We originally, our plan was to plant a church back in Portland, you know, it's kind of maybe even through River West. I was going to do it, but I needed to finish my grad degree. I'd been going to Western Seminary a little bit, but hadn't finished my grad degree.
Why did you go to Wheaton after you had already started that?
I was just about to.
Yeah.
Ask
I mean, that's a good question.
Western.
Because Multnomah and Western are pretty connected in the Portland area, and the professors overlap a little bit. And there was a side of me that wanted to try something a little more ecumenical, if you will. Like, I wanted to learn a little bit more out of the experience, because I, I mean,
get out of your bubble a little bit.
Get out of my bubble. Multnomah and Western are very conservative Baptist, if you will, and which is great. And that's kind of where I land theologically.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, I wanted to get out of it a little bit and see the world. And so I'd applied at both Talbot in California and at Wheaton. And it was an exegesis degree in Wheaton, which is a super nerdy Greek and Hebrew program.
So part of it, which you told me in the past, is that when I asked you why did you do that program versus say like a, you know, an MDiv or something like that, is that you wanted really to just mostly be in the Bible.
Yeah, that was Guy's advice too. He goes, because he had finished his degree at Western Seminary, and he said the classes, like the counseling classes and the pastoral ministry classes, were helpful, but something that's you're never going to regret in ministry
is more theology,
is more Bible and theology, in particular Bible. And so, I mean, I was most of the seminaries at that time were really focusing on systematic theology, how do I put what I believe in a box, in a sense, and how do I make it
categorize things?
Categorize things, which I'm not going to pick on. I mean, there's a side of it that we have to. Human mind does
you
that.
You have to.
But what Wheaton was doing, especially at that time in the early 2000s, was kind of biblical theology. And the
before
biblical,
it was cool.
It was before it was cool. And it was like the professors that were there, some of the, you know, Doug Moos or Greg Beals or, you know, whoever else, Gary Burge, these were people, and Karen Jobes as well. These were people who were like, man, these people are doing biblical theology, and I want to go take classes from them to learn how to think through the Bible biblically as opposed to just systematically.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other podcast in and of itself. But I loved my experience at Wheaton. Wheaton was amazing. And it's kind of, we look back on it with fondness for our first 2 years. We got stuck in Chicago for a year, but
I was gonna say you don't really talk about Chicago with much
fondness. It's the weather, man. I loved Wheaton. I actually loved the downtown area of Chicago, but I didn't like those suburbs of Chicago. Wheaton's cool, great.
Did you like
suburbs.
Their pizza?
The Chicago style pizza is delicious. Yeah, that sauce on top and the
it's weird
takes
to me.
An hour and a half to
I like Detroit style pizza best, but we can talk about that after the podcast.
Oh man, there's like types of pizza.
There is, man, in
New York you know whatever.
I just think when I think Chicago, I just think horrible weather. I don't know. It's probably unfair, but I just think hot.
There
summers
is a
super cold winter.
So the weather tries to kill you every day.
Chicago is a different type of cold. It is weird. It cuts down to your bones.
Yeah.
It just destroys your soul a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. It's a crazy place.
Your pancreas gets cold.
No offense, Chicago people.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, there are people who have some fond memories of Chicago. And again, the people we met there and things like that were awesome. It's just, I mean, look at where we live. This place is amazing, right?
It is.
Like water, mountains, ocean, river. I mean,
coffee.
I mean, this is,
tacos.
And we felt called to be back here, honestly. So we were just trying to get back with all our souls.
Guys ended up in Wheaton. You discerned the calling that way, and it was sort of out of comfort into a season of growth.
Yeah. I remember being out there. I finished my program in a couple years, pretty intense program in a couple years. And we thought, kind of with rosy glasses on, that everyone's going to want a 31-year-old pastor that just finished a seminary degree that has 9 years of ministry experience,
absolutely.
Right? Like, everyone's going to want that guy, you know?
Boy, I am really the stuff.
Yeah, I'm the stuff, you know? And come to find out, no one actually wanted that guy, you know? So I end up, so let's go back to calling for a second. So we finished up there. I had moved my grandma out there with us because we were taking care of her at this point. It's a whole another part of the story that you can ask me another time. And then we had Zach as well. So we have two kids now.
Yeah.
Zach's 15 now and Bethany's 18. And so this is a few years ago. But I remember getting out there and we were running out of money. Actually, we'd kind of run out of money, to be honest with you, because of graduate school education.
Yeah.
We used all our proceeds from our house that we sold to kind of pay for life in Chicago, you know. And then we were trying to get back to Portland. And we had a conversation with River West, and it just didn't feel like it was the right thing to come back to River West. They were given a building in Lake Oswego, which is a whole other story. And they were just moving in a different direction than church planning. I was like, this isn't it. And so I just couldn't find a place. I mean, I applied at a million churches. I applied at a couple Southern Baptist churches.
I remember
like,
that. And
are you Southern Baptist? I'm like, no. They're like, sorry,
see
man.
See you later.
Yeah. True story. And I applied at some different places. So, but really we were focusing on trying to get back to the Northwest. We had kind of set our parameters around kind of north of Sacramento, south of Vancouver, kind of Vancouver, British Columbia.
It's pretty large geographical area. Yeah, yep. That's like anyone in this swath right here.
And I had a couple interviews for the most part, and just doors were closing. So much so that the church we were just attending in Chicago, Wheaton Bible, Glen Ellen Bible, what we were part of, great pastor there named Kelly Brady. He's a great dude. And he, I was just helping serve there a little bit. Kelly was serving the worship team. We were serving in kids ministry because we had small kids, because that's what you do. Like, you know, but I was also doing some other things. And I remember
I avoided that, by the way.
Did you? Nice job. Well done.
So did I.
Yeah. That's because you were pastoring or something. Yeah. I was
like, I have other responsibilities.
No, I was in, I was like the classic guy, cause I'm in seminary and they're like, man, you got small children, come serve in a nursery. So we did. But I remember, like, you know, being at that church and they had an opening for a missions pastor role there. And I'm like, in Chicago, it's cold. I'm working at a Catholic bookstore, helping put like atrocity things on the internet to sell to Catholic churches all over the United States. It was brutal.
Like, this is not how I envisioned my life.
And it has
out.
No connection. Like, I mean, it's just, there was a store in downtown Chicago candles. I got a job at. I applied at Home Depot and all the other places too, but like, that was the job I got. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And so, I mean, it's such a weird thing. And so we applied for this job as a missions pastor in Glen Ellen, you know, at Glen Ellen Bible. And I went through a couple of interviews with them to the extent where they finally offered me the job. And I remember coming home and telling Kelly, like, is this it? Are we stuck in Chicago forever? Like,
yeah.
I felt like the Israelites, like, have I brought my family to Chicago to
die?
Yeah. You know, like, I want to go back to the meat pots in Egypt, you know, whatever it was. Like,
they had onions.
Yeah. So it was really tough. And around that same time, I got an email from Dr. Bashirs from Western Seminary. I had emailed him before and was hounding him a little bit and saying, hey, I'm looking for a church.
Looking for something.
Looking for a job. And he sent me a note and said, hey, there's this church in Seattle that's looking for a pastor to come and revitalize it, you know. And so they're kind of an old church, and that's what they do. And so ended up getting back there.
Just a question before we get back here, back to Seattle.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit ago about, to take it back to calling. We talked about calling being, you know, a sense of opportunity on top of gifting. On top of affirmation, that kind of thing. So you start in Portland, and there's, you know, affirmation, there's opportunity, there's gifting, all of that's there. You go to Chicago and you find yourself with no opportunity.
It dries up.
What does that do to your sense of calling? I know you're there, you're thinking, do we accept this mission pastor role? But did you ever think, maybe the Catholic bookstore is the way it's supposed to go? Or am I doing the wrong thing? Is this God saying I got to go do something else?
That's a great question. And the answer is, I really questioned calling at that point. It was a dark time for me.
Yeah.
Funny enough,
yeah.
My wife looks back on it, and you can hear her stories sometimes. She viewed it as really fond times.
Well, she's a little sunnier than you.
She is, but she also...
I say that kindly, but yeah.
No, there's no joke about that. That is true. If you have a choice between which Larson you want to get to know, choose Kelly. I'm just telling you right now. She views it with fondness because of a couple of things. We had a pretty good friend group there that were kind of close, but also our family was really close during that time. It was sweet. It was young kids. I was really there. I was present because I could leave the Catholic bookstore behind
leave
it there. I didn't have this like career job.
The books didn't call you.
Yeah. But I felt like it was soul sucking to me. I mean, there were moments where I was like, Lord, why am I not finding this? Like I've trying to serve you here. I'm trying to do what you asked me to do. I even feel like I'm being obedient to you, like to be out here, and the doors are just closing. And so there were a lot of kind of deep, dark moments of the soul. In retrospect, Rex, the thing is like the Lord used that to tear some of the kind of independence, or not independence, probably the self-sufficiency.
Overconfidence.
Yeah. Yes. Because after a year of applying for ministry jobs and hearing no over and over again, you start to question your own calling, you know, and maybe in a good way. And so, I mean, that's part of my story where I was really peeled of some of that young man's disease. I have a whole other story, which will have to be another podcast, but, of having some more self-sufficiency torn out of me.
Well, I've heard the statement, something along the lines of, before God can use a man mightily, he has to humble him painfully. Something along those lines. It's so
true. Great word. Yeah.
You got to burn some pride
some
out.
Off.
Yeah. Yeah. Burn some things out of you.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting time there, and really wrestling with the Lord and kind of saying, like, God, what do you want from me? Am I supposed to be in ministry? Am I not supposed to be in ministry?
Yeah.
And then kind of him showing up at the 11th hour. I mean, what I felt like was the 11th hour. I mean, I was ready to tell Kelly Brady that I'll do the missions pastor thing. We'll jump in here. We'll be a part of the ministry here. And that's great. It's not really what I wanted to do, but
yeah,
it was,
but
like
it was
in
a thing.
Ministry. And it was like right after that, I can't remember the timing exactly, but I mean, it was within a month or something where I was flying out to Seattle a couple times and doing, candidating with the church in right by Green Lake, and coming into a ministry role in Seattle, which brought us back here.
Yeah. All right. So at this point, you're back in Seattle.
Yeah.
Or back in the area. You were in Portland. Now you're in the Northwest.
Yeah.
And everything's great, right? Everything's perfect.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of interesting because I got involved in a church ministry at a church, 100-year-old church in the Green Lake area. And I was there for a couple years. The 1 year was pretty amazing. The first year was. And the second year just turned really south. The church kind of ran out of money. The huge building that we had was deferred in its maintenance and some of the things that need to be done. And, you know, it was just a really hard season that second year. I had a lot of excitement going into it that first year. But that second year, it was just really painful to see things happen and just challenges of stuff. And eventually we had to kind of vote to shut that building and shut that church down as a congregation. It was a congregational voting church. And so we met one Sunday and we realized, I think there's people I could ask, but we could say, I think there was like $5,000 left in the bank for the church altogether.
You could ask Chris Trina.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. And just say like, that's all we have in here. Should we call this thing? And we voted one Sunday to shut the church down. And so that was really weird. And so we did that. There's a whole story behind that one. It's an amazing story also of confirmation of calling and some pain and some pretty interesting times in church ministry.
Yeah.
But from there, you know, got a call from my friend Jonathan Alexander over at North Shore Baptist Church at the time, and he gave me a buzz and said,
"Was that incidental, or did he know what was going on?"
He walked with me through that time.
Okay.
So Jonathan and I worked together at River West Church on like Oswego for a while, which is pretty crazy. I'd met him in Portland. My wife was a secretary of River West Church for a season as well. And when we were looking for an associate pastor, she got this resume from a guy who had been an Army Ranger and just graduated from Dallas Theological Seminary. And he looked awesome, you know, compared to all the rest of the resumes we were getting. And so it floated to the top. And I remember flying him out, Jonathan Alexander from Texas, and he stayed in our house even. Because like I said, my starter home was bigger than my home now. So so it's pretty cool. So I got to Jonathan Alexander and I watched Oh Brother, Where Art Thou together. That was our first experience together. We hung out. Exactly. Yeah. So it was super fun. And so Jonathan, when I got up to Seattle here, he was pastoring in Kirkland. And so we'd have lunch together every, you know, 2 months or something, 3 months. And during that last year, he was really a part of kind of what was going on and saw what was happening from the inside.
Yeah.
And it was great. So he saw that. So basically when the whole thing shut down, he gave me a buzz and said, "Man, I'm so sorry. You know, but would you be interested in a role here to come be our church planter and come on staff for a little while and come plant a church through
that?" And that's interesting because like you talked about back in Portland, what made you feel like I got to go do something else is this desire to church plant. And you really hadn't done that to that point.
Yeah.
Because you left and you did the academic thing. You felt like that was a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
And then you end up back at this church in Seattle. And it's sort of a church revitalization.
Yeah.
And there's some similarities, but it's also a little different because you're not having to, you're basically starting from square one instead of having to go back and you know, dig out a bunch of unhealth or, you know, rewrite the way you do things.
Yeah.
You haven't really done it yet.
Church revitalizations take an element of trust that and building trust that some churches can't get there because they're running out of fines and finances and running out of time, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's kind of what happened there in a sense at this church in downtown Seattle is that the trust factor just never was able to be built. You can't build trust in 1 year, you know, like you need more than that.
And there weren't enough resources to
keep it going. So while that experience has a lot of positives about it, and there's some families that followed us to church plant eventually, and there's some relationships that are still connected through that. Ultimately that was a really tough thing to walk through and see church revitalizations are tough, real tough. Yeah.
So what did that do? And again, I know I keep ringing this bell, but that's what you said you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
When you get here and this starts before it ends, but when it starts, the trajectory starts heading down, what does that do to your sense of calling? Like, what does that do? Is it, are you back in Chicago state of mind where you're like, am I doing the right thing? Like,
you know,
is this me? What's happening here?
For me, actually, well, flip flop, because Kelly, had a harder time in Seattle at the church there when we were called back. I, had an easier time when I was in Seattle because I felt like I was doing what God called me to do.
Yeah.
Finally. Like I had a genuine conviction inside. And I think, I mean, I can look back on that experience and say there were things that every church leadership does wrong that we could, you know, talk about. But I think overall, our experience there at the church, our elder board was strong and our leadership decisions were strong. And it was really a positive thing. We tried everything we could to get it there. And there were some painful, you know, speed bumps along the way.
Yeah.
So here's what I'll say, Darren. I think that why I think you felt like you were finally doing what God had called you to do is because you are a gifted leader.
Thanks, man.
You are shaped for leadership, and you were finally getting to do leadership, even though it was hard and a terrible situation. Like, you were actually getting to exercise those giftings that God had given you, as opposed to just being in the classroom and working at a bookstore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
I led those books in the right order.
whereas for Kelly, like, she was enjoying Chicago, like you said, because you had great community and the family was close and you're around. And meanwhile, you're wondering. But so here's a thread, though, that I'm seeing through your whole story is that never are you going, I'm not sure I'm supposed to be
good point.
In vocational ministry. You were questioning, where am I supposed to be, not what am I supposed to be doing overall. Yeah. Does that make sense? Is that true?
I think so. And I think I've told someone this before who's asked me about vocational ministry. And I think my answer to a person was that they were looking for ministry. And I told this person, like, go into ministry if you feel like you'd be disobedient doing anything else, you know, to God. Yeah. Like, that's the calling of it. Because there are so many, because there's things about vocational ministry. The three of us sitting in the same room can talk about this stuff because we don't have non-Christian friends as much as you, as much as we could out in the marketplace. We're weird in public. Like, just to be honest, like, you know, we become these, like, almost, it's almost like we're in a zoo. Like, people watch us
a little
like,
bit.
You know, you're a weirdo. You're like the ministry guy.
I want to talk to you because you're a Christian
pastor. You know, and so it's like the calling for ministry is a strange beast. And I think I feel like in my life, even today, that I would be not following what God wants for me if I was not in ministry.
Yeah.
Could I do something else? Probably. And I think for a lot of people, I would say, well, can you do something else? And if you can, you probably should.
Yeah,
you
know? What I've heard a lot of people
that
say.
That's exactly what my old pastor said to me. He goes,
hey, me too.
He goes, I tell people, if you can do anything else
and
make pastoral
it work.
Ministry, he goes, do that. Yeah. And if you can't, then be a pastor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, totally. I literally have no skills. Okay, I guess I'll.
Which is funny because I look at you, I'm like, you are called to be a pastor. You know, like, you are a good pastor. You got the heart for it. I mean, there's just something about knowing you. Like, I can't see you any other role than pastoral ministry.
If I weren't in pastoral ministry, I would be hopefully delivering packages for UPS. I'm pretty good at driving.
What can Brown do for you?
Which sometimes looks appealing on Monday mornings. I got it.
That's very true.
I think I could do that.
Darren and I have talked about, like, we know how well we're doing when, like, you know, who we're envying that day, like, as far as their job. Like, if it's if it's the person who's making your burrito at Chipotle, you know, it's been a pretty hard week.
I could tell it was pretty low when I was thinking about selling vape cartridges. You know, I was like, I could do that.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Oh man.
So you make it through your residency at North Shore.
Yeah.
You plant Imprint Church.
Yeah.
And you've been the lead pastor here. What is, have you...
Sum that up in the next 2 minutes.
Yeah, in the next two minutes.
Yeah, because we're running out of time. Yeah. People are like...
Pretty much. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, but people have an idea of how that's gone. If they're a part here, that culture is kind of carried on in that kind of way. How do you see your calling changing today? Has it changed? How do you see it having changed over the last little bit, or where do you see it going in the next few years? I asked, how has it changed?
I think maybe I can answer this way. I think my passion for things has changed direction a little bit. And what I mean by that is, like, I think in the early days of ministry, there was a sense of me trying to prove it to myself that I could do this and be successful.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the experience of the church in Seattle, like, tore that out from underneath me. I mean, the bottom fell out of that one. The wheels fell off, if you will. Like, and I think for me, I was trying to prove it that I could do it. I don't know if I was trying to prove it to myself, the people were watching me. I think it was mostly to myself, honestly, like if I was being completely transparent. I think there was a side of me that was like, prove it that you can do it, you know? And then when the whole thing fell apart, there was this sense of like, just like, where's my identity? Where's my calling?
Would you say that the Lord helped purify your heart that? Because your motive can be a little bit self-focused, and I'm going to prove it to myself or to people around me, instead of I should be doing this because God's called me and I want to honor him.
Totally.
You know? We all have mixed motives. Not that you didn't have a desire to honor the Lord. You clearly did.
I did, yes.
But there's a little bit of that self-justification that can get in there.
Agree.
Sure.
But when I started Imprint, I think because I'd kind of had the everything torn out of me, that sounded amazing. I think everything kind of torn out of me in a sense of like, you know, this ability to get it all done or to prove myself or whatever it is, because all that stuff was torn out. I think when I started Imprint, I lost a bit of that. I didn't have that. I was like, honestly, this whole thing rises or falls based on what the Lord chooses to do. Like, and I think... So I moved my focus from like trying to make success be my goal of somewhat to making health be my goal. Like if I can just focus my entire life on being healthy, and building a healthy church, that's a win. That's a huge win. And so I think, you know, I come sometimes, like we've gone to these church pastors conferences before, and you hear all these pastors get up there leading a big thing, talk about vision and leading your people into mission. And I'm just like, puke. Just makes me want to puke, you know? Because I'm just like, I just want a healthy community, Christ-centered community that the Lord is moving amongst and that we can feel good about in the long, like we're
trying
our best.
But I would say,
just
so if people don't know you, I would say that doesn't mean that Darren doesn't have vision for the church. It's a sort of marketing, sort of like make your mark kind of vision thing, kind of like big church, like ministry fair type stuff that we've seen at conferences that we don't really resonate with.
Totally. Yeah, I speak in extremes.
And that is a bit alien to the culture of Imprint Church. If you've been around here, you know that. We talk a whole lot more about health than we do about anything else. Because I think your philosophy, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that a healthy church will kind of... those other metrics will show up.
Yeah, and to honestly not care too much about the metrics at some level.
Exactly.
Like I think it's, I wanted those metrics to be good at various points in my life, but they mean less to me now than they did.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because I'm getting older, because I've had some of that torn out of me, but I genuinely, like someone asked me the other day, like, where do you see Imprint going in 10 years or whatever it is? And I'm like, I don't really know, honestly. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like I have to give some amazing answer to cast some vision so that you'll feel like you got to be part of something we're doing. Honestly, I want our team to be good. I want our team to be healthy.
We want to be faithful.
I want to be excited about what we're doing together. I want this church community to be as healthy as can be. I want our leadership team to be strong.
Yeah.
The things I can control. Like,
totally,
right? And so like, what's my calling now? I think my calling right now is in that sense to do everything I can to building the healthy community that we have to be a part of. Like, it's a joy to be part of Imprint Church.
I think so,
like,
too.
I would choose to go to this church if I wasn't pastoring it. I would be like, this is an amazing community to be a part of, and I want to be part of this thing.
Yeah.
Because it has a vibe. It has, like, a healthy vibe. I've heard that from various people.
It does.
So, like, they come in and say, man, you know,
there's a bit of a non-anxious vibe about it, I think, where it's not, we're not nervous about a certain number of people showing up or a certain other metric or anything
there's
like
a,
that.
What I see in Darren, I see in you that I really have appreciated is that's different, I think, from when you were at the church in Seattle. Not that I saw that in action, but just from your story, is that you're more okay with it failing.
Ah, it's true.
The Imprint failing.
I agree.
Not that you want it to fail, but that if it did fail and we had to close our doors, it wouldn't absolutely devastate your soul.
Correct.
Because you've already gone through a loss and the Lord has worked on you and purified your heart, so that in some measure, this might sound paradoxical or strange to say, you care less now than you did in the past, right? In the sense that, like, my whole sense of identity and purpose in life isn't wrapped up in Imprint Church, whereas for many pastors it is, because your vocation is very tied in with who you are and your giftings
absolutely.
And all that stuff.
And I mean, that's not to say, we work hard around here. We put in a lot of hours. We do all the things we can. We've faced the difficulties of life and walking through the complexities of
But you're not grinding it out with a performance prove yourself mindset, which is unfortunately what is in a lot of church
practices. That's true.
I started taking a day off when I planted Imprint, like a legit day off, you know, and I've kind of stuck in that level. And Kelly, she could tell you the story, how much she's appreciated that, because I...
Which is good, because it's almost a badge of honor when you hear the church planting stories.
I worked like, 70 hours a day.
I worked 7 days a week for 3 years straight. It's hard, you know, like green berets, you know.
Totally. And I'm like
that's okay.
That's not healthy. Yeah, it's not a healthy thing. And so...
No, that leaks into the discipleship too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been part of... a church plant, and this isn't my podcast, so we're not going to go in there.
Oh, but you'll come up soon.
Like, yeah. But like, I've been there where that was kind of the thing, the badge of honor was like, I work all the time. But that was what people started looking at. It's like, okay, well, if you're following Jesus really well, that means you're going to be working,
gutting it out
all the time, and pushing uphill both ways and all that kind of stuff.
We'll talk about that on your queso podcast.
Yeah, the queso. Yeah. But I think that leaks into the culture of a church. And I can say that's leaked into the culture of Imprint is a focus on our, let's just do things healthfully.
Yeah.
Like, instead of doing everything we can, let's just do the things that we do healthfully and good.
Yeah. It's been a beautiful community. It's been a beautiful community for my wife and I. It's been a great community for my kids. My kids love going to church here when they do, when they can crawl out of bed, you know, when they choose to be here.
Teenagers.
They always feel like this is the place to be. And so grateful for that.
Yeah. Well, Darren, it's time to wrap up probably.
Special guest. Thanks for being our special guest today.
Can I ask one more?
Can I put that on my title under my email?
Yes.
Special guest.
I'll put it on the website.
Special
right
guest
after
on
this.
The Bound and Hope.
Special guest. That's on. Put it on LinkedIn because you probably have a LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah. I've been updating my resume just in
every
case.
Time
you know,
every time I log into LinkedIn.
Just in case there's a different calling.
Yeah.
I log into LinkedIn maybe like once a year. And every time I do, I'm why do I?
You can't log into LinkedIn.
Why do I have this thing? I have no idea why I have it.
They will find you.
It's
if you
weird.
Live in a deserted island, you get an email.
You get a message in a bottle that says, LinkedIn. Hey, this person you graduated high school with knows how to use PowerPoint. And you're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Let me ask this just before we sign off. What's something that people probably don't know about you?
Oh, man.
It's kind of a fun fact.
Gosh, I don't know.
Like a hobby maybe or something.
Well, most people know I golf. Which is kind of a weird thing. I started golfing.
Oh, I can tell think you of anything for Darren.
I started golfing because it was like really hard to do anything outdoors there because it's just a concrete jungle.
Yeah.
And so, and then in Chicago, they still have kind of Midwestern values. Every Monday afternoon, they let pastors or people in ministry golf for free.
Oh, whoa.
And so I would golf a West Chicago golf course every Monday afternoon. I kind of learned how to golf at that point. It became kind of a hobby.
Dude, I would have gone golfing if that was open to me.
For real.
Yeah, it's not cheap in Washington, I can tell you that. But I do enjoy it. It's funny. Another random hobby is I played baseball in school. We had some really good baseball players on
Here's a random thing about Darren. He has been to a lot of places in the world, and he has had the strangest string of odd jobs that I've ever heard
of. Yeah, I've had some weird jobs.
I mean, I've known Darren for years, and he'll be like, oh, yeah, I had this job doing it. I'm like, what?
He also knows every
person.
There was
one time I was in Azerbaijan working as a courier. I'm like, what?
Oh, excuse me?
I learned that when I was reading you remember that book, Blue Like Jazz, that came out years ago?
Yeah.
So going back to my story, I remember reading that a guy named Donald Miller wrote or whatever. I read it a zillion years ago, but I was reading through and he's talking about a class that he attended at Western Seminary. It was taught by John Salehammer with like all these people in it. I was like, I was in that class, you know, so that's how I know everyone.
That's awesome. That's one last thing is that Darren seems to know everybody in the tri-state area.
I don't know why.
But like you mentioned someone random. He's like, oh yeah, I met them. Like, I worked with them at this random job in Azerbaijan, you know? So,
just to clarify, I've never been to Azerbaijan.
No. Well, Darren, seriously, thank you.
Yeah.
And
thanks, guys.
I'm not trying to get on the record and just win brownie points, but it is a pleasure and an honor doing ministry with you and hanging with you. Guys, if you have questions for Darren, he'd love to answer them, to reach out. DLarson@imprintchurch.org. Ask him about random rabbit trails we didn't chase on this podcast. But until then, until next week, we will, I guess we'll just see you later.
See ya.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.